All right, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining Click this week. This week, we're going to be covering a couple of things. First thing off the rank is Tesla Battery Day, what was actually announced and what that means for you. Amazon's hardware event, from flying drones to smart speakers and everything else. Google's Pixel event, which covered their new phones and a bunch of speakers and Chromecast, as well as our flagship topic this week, which is around home office headphones, rundown of the landscape as we settle into working from home with others during COVID. All right, let's get started. Kai, how are we going this week?
Yeah, really good. I think after our first two episodes, we've gotten a bit of a rhythm going. We actually know, you know, kind of what we want to cover and how we want to cover it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I've been having a lot of fun over the last couple of weeks. You know, we've gotten some good feedback on audio quality. Obviously, that's something that we're working on and we're still learning as we just get started in this podcasting space. There's heaps to learn. But I've certainly had a lot of fun. And I think it sounds like the way we're approaching the topics is resonating with a couple of people. So I think let's just keep going and hopefully more people tune in.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think this is probably one of the best times to be starting you know, a podcast on this topic, given that there's so much going on in the tech space right now. There's so many events, so many new tech to talk about. So, you know, it's a wealth of content for us to cover.
Yeah, no, and I think since we last spoke or we last recorded even, I think there were three, maybe four major events. I mean, we had the Tesla Battery Day, we had Amazon's hardware event where it was everything under the sun that they released, Google's Pixel event. I think there was one more that's not coming up to the top of my head, but this time of year is always really exciting. Things are changing around so quickly, and with the COVID restrictions, I think there's just more and more announcements coming out so quickly from the big tech companies, because they can just do everything virtually and just push them out through their stores.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess, you know, given COVID and how everyone's pretty much stuck at home, the money that people are usually spending on holidays and traveling, that's probably all saved up now. So it's probably, you know, they're probably looking for channels to spend their money, and so you know, new gadgets and new tech is always a good way to spend your money, especially as we're coming up to Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of big purchases, Tesla and their Battery Day, let's get stuck into it this week. So Kai, you're the resident Tesla fanboy. Give us a rundown in terms of what happened, what kind of smoke is Elon emitting from where are they based in? Is it, what's...
They're based in California.
Yeah, that's it.
So they're in Fremont. Yeah, it's in California. Cool. So Tesla's Battery Day, I think there was a lot of hype around it, mainly more around the tech and not so much, you know, new models new models of cars coming out. There were, you know, leading up to it, there were a lot of rumors about Tesla improving heavily on the battery tech, given that that's you know, one of the most expensive components in their cars, and also something that's been a barrier for them in terms of getting the mileage and removing or eliminating the distance, kind of the mileage fear that people have when they think about moving to EVs.
Mm.
Yeah, so you know, just a high level glance over what were the key highlights that you know Elon went through. They are on track to really innovate on their battery tech to bring down the cost per kilowatt. But I think more importantly, one of their key constraints in the materials they use to make batteries is the use of cobalt. So you do need, you know, a fair bit of cobalt in your batteries, and that is currently, well, it's mostly mined in it's in Congo, and you know there's a whole heap of ethical issues around them using child labor, and you know it's not pleasant for a company like Tesla to be you know, all high and mighty about trying to save the world and then being linked to using materials that's been mined using child labor. So they've been spending a lot of time and resources into researching battery tech that is less reliant on cobalt as a first step, and then eventually, you know, moving away from cobalt completely. So that was their main focus for a big chunk of the presentation. They're not quite there yet. So this is more of a 2 to 3 year roadmap of where they will be.
Yeah, and that's what I found the most interesting. I mean, most companies come out and they'll announce things that are maybe a week or 2 weeks out. Tesla this time came out and announced things that were between 2 to 3 years out. And it was sort of bizarre that they even bothered announcing this out to the market. I mean, Yeah, I mean, it'd be good to hear what you think about that, because it just perplexed me, because it sounded like, I mean, there was a lot of fanfare around what Battery Day would be, and inherently in the name, it was going to be about batteries. I don't know why they did it now.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think as we were watching the presentation, it was a lot of cool tech that they were showing. Not to get too deep into details, but they've effectively moved away from the traditional battery design, or they are trying to move away from the traditional battery design, where you have a cathode and an anode, to actually design it so that there's it's more of a seamless design. I don't even know what the right terminology is, but the graphics look cool and the illustration looks cool. And then the question that constantly pops up in your head is, well, when is this happening? They're showing that they will achieve a lot of efficiencies and a lot of progress over in terms of their research and where they're getting to, but they weren't overly specific about when that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit more telling towards the end of the presentation, where they kind of changed their tone to away from the tech that we're looking into or the research that we've been involving in. It's more about, come work for us. It's a great place to work. We're still very far from our vision of transitioning the world towards EVs and away from fossil fuels.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. No, that's right. So it sounded like it was a bit of a we need more talent. We're still growing, so come work for us. We need more bright minds to actually push us to where we need to be. And at the same time, it could also be a call for suppliers to kind of gear up and think about what else they need to do to be able to meet Tesla's demands.
Yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, I definitely don't think it was a consumer announcement. It followed their AGM, or at least a shareholder meeting, didn't it? So it certainly felt more like something to the market, as in other players and suppliers in the overall supply chain, rather than end consumers per se. Even though they had it was really interesting how they did the event, how they had a whole car lot full of Teslas and individual people in each of the in an individual car listening to Elon and the, was it the chair or whoever was on the board announcing those things as well. I mean, that was an interesting thing. I thought that would go towards a full virtual event like we've seen, but kudos to them if they did that in a COVID safe way.
No, that's right. It was, although, a bit concerning to learn that those weren't the audience's own cars. So I thought they could just drive up and kind of park their cars there and listen to Elon and the presentation. But turns out that they're actually brand new cars awaiting delivery. So a bit concerning.
Yeah, aren't you in the market for? Maybe you'll get one that got featured in the event.
No, that's right. I'm glad. Yeah, again, I haven't ordered one yet. So on that note, though, it was also quite interesting to hear that a slightly different take from Elon's perspective around how affordable their cars are. So if you look at their roadmap from day one, it was create a really cool car, which is their Roadster, which is meant to meet the demand of a niche and specific market.
Yeah, Tony Stark.
Yeah, that's right. And then release a more affordable kind of sedan, but it's still expensive because it needs to fund early research. And then the third stage was to release a mass market car, which is what they thought was the Model 3. But it seems like they've realized that actually their cars are not that affordable, even with the Model 3 price point. In Australia, the cheapest Model 3 you're going to get is, I think, about 78K drive away, right? So that is not affordable by any means, right? So if you really want, if your vision is really to roll things out, roll out EVs and make a dent in the internal combustion engine market, you need to make it more affordable than that. So the presentation covered a commitment to release a $25,000 car, which was quite cool. They even had it there, but it wasn't unveiled. Like it was in under covers. So
I was just going to ask you, do you know what was under the covers?
No, that's right. So people on forums were wondering if they were going to bring the Model 3 down to $25,000, which I think would definitely affect sales quite dramatically.
They'll get sued to the ground.
Exactly right. So they're going to release, people on forums have called it the Model 2.
Mm.
So a smaller kind of hatchback SUV kind of model. It'd be interesting to see how that pans out. And that's, at that price point, that's where you're going against the Nissan Leaf and the Hyundai Konas, EV, yeah, Ioniq, sorry, yeah, markets. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. On a similar note, they've also recently reduced the price of their Model 3s in China. So all the Chinese produced Model 3s got a, I think, 8% price decrease, and that boosted sales up quite significantly.
Mm.
And that just shows to you, you know, the importance of having your supply, a local supply chain, so you're not relying on, you know, massive logistics costs to get things done.
Yeah, well, I mean, despite the huge overheads that come with an automotive business, they do run a relatively leaner model, I think. I mean, I'm not an expert in their operations, but I'm pretty sure they run a leaner model given what they're trying to do.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's right. That's always been, I believe, Elon's kind of principles. It's about
you can't even buy a car in the dealer.
Yeah, that's right. You don't even have a dealer. Everything needs to be done online. It's about simplifying the whole process. And that really was, I think, the kind of principles that kickstarted his success. So yeah. I don't know if you've read his autobiography, but his biography, where he really wanted to go to space, but he wasn't able to get funding, I believe, to build or to hire or work with incumbents to achieve that mission or vision. So what he did was, he put out a spreadsheet and started figuring out from first principles what he would need to do to build a rocket to get to space. So, his efforts really his achievements speak for itself, given that, you know, SpaceX is leading in terms of showing how people can get to space in a cost-effective way.
Yeah. Well, enough Elon talk. I mean, you know how I feel about that narcissist. I mean, that innovator and pioneer. Let's get going onto the next thing. So next thing on the docket is the Amazon hardware event. I mean, let's get the boring stuff out of the way first. There were some new Echo speakers. We've got what they call the spherical Echo, the Echo Dot with a clock, which surprisingly has a clock on it. I guess the quick takeaway of that is that they're literally the same as the old ones, just new sort of design. They're sort of, as the name implies, spheres rather than those little pucks that they used to be. Apparently they've improved their speakers yet. Hard to tell. I mean, the baseline or the starting point was pretty poor. I mean, the Amazons were more really budget speakers rather than, that weren't really focused on quality, i.e. what the AirPod, the HomePod is. But apparently they've tried to improve that now. They've got the new Fire TV Stick and the TV Stick Lite. I'm not super clear on what this is, but my understanding is that it's a video streamer, I guess their version of the Chromecast. Nothing really to sort of write home about there. The interesting one that they sort of started to push along is their Eero Mesh routers, and I may have pronounced that wrong, but For the listeners who aren't aware, Amazon acquired Eero probably in the last 12 months. So Eero is a mesh internet router company based in the States, and they acquired them last year. And I think this is their first move that they're actually doing with that as a company. Not sure what they're doing with them, but from what I've heard, Eero's routers really are class-leading, really makes it really simple for anyone to take that and set up a pretty expansive home Wi-Fi network without getting into the techo details. I mean, I'm personally keen to get my hands on these and test them out, but I guess that's an idea for another day if I can ever get my hands on them. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, Kai, but mesh routers they're normally like $100 for a set.
Yeah, no, they're not cheap, but it's really good, especially from a perspective of a gamer, to see these sorts of technology, you know, become mainstream and, you know, hopefully eventually become cheaper to adopt as well. Because, you know, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place as gamers, given that ideally you want to plug your computer into Ethernet, so your network cable, because that's your fastest way of getting your best speeds. Whereas Wi-Fi, you know, it's if you have your microwave running next to your router, that's gonna impact your speeds and your latency. So these mesh routers, you know, should really improve things if you don't have the option of connecting straight to your router.
Yeah. And I mean, they've really caught on in the States, I think. I don't think many people in Australia have mesh routers yet. I mean, it's probably the cost, right? I mean, most people, I mean, the reality is in Australia, most people get their routers from Ironet or Telstra or Optus, and it's whatever the default one comes with. No one really buys their own one these days.
Yeah, and you know, you need good internet to start with before you can actually start distributing good connections. So,
well, we've got the NBN.
No, that's right. I wonder if it has also to do with the way we build houses here in Australia, given that everything's, you know, gypsum and a wooden structure. It's easier to just connect. So, you know, the real enthusiasts would actually connect, would have Ethernet plugs in every room, so they can, you know, do that relatively easy. Whereas if you're in other countries, you know, Singapore, for example, I know everything needs to be built by brick because the foundations aren't strong enough. So it's not as easy to just break a wall and put through cables and make everything work as seamless.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, historically, I guess it has been relatively easy. I mean, the Australian landscape, most people do renos themselves and they're willing to, you know, bang on the wall, for lack of a word, and drill a hole in the wall. But I think as we move, well, prior to COVID, there was a bit of a push towards sort of medium density living. I guess think of like townhouses that are all stuck together based on concrete walls and concrete foundations. I mean, there though, Wi-Fi does not go through that at all. I mean, Wi-Fi, I've got a tiny little router in this house and it's probably around, it covers the whole house, barely. Like some parts are black spots, but it covers the whole house and it's a tiny little one that iNet gave us. Versus, you know, someone that I know who lives in a townhouse that's concrete based, their router doesn't even go past the first floor. So they do need extenders to sort of get the rest of the house covered. All right, cool. So then moving on to the next one, which is the Luna game streaming. And this one's really interesting. I'm surprised Amazon's throwing their hat into the ring here now. I mean, most what this essentially is, it's essentially a console, but rather than buying games individually, you pay a monthly subscription to get access to, you know, this whole game library. And the way I describe it is essentially it's a Netflix for games. And so what's really interesting here is that Amazon isn't a game developer. They're not really in this space, but they've thrown their hat in the ring. I think they're coming up against Google's got their own one. I think Google Stadia.
Where did that go?
That's still here. See, the thing is, all of these tech companies are based in the States, right? And they need to get traction there before they even come to the Australian geography. But I still think I don't know if that's launched yet. We should look into that.
I don't think it is. It's a super cool concept, but I haven't heard much since launch. Well, since they've released the concept. So yeah.
Not Xbox. Who's the people behind them? Microsoft is throwing their hat in the ring in it as well. I forgot what it is. I think it's Xbox Pass or Xbox something. Yeah, something. So there's a whole bunch of people trying to jump into the game streaming, and I guess they're trying to bring that upfront cost down and just make it easier for, I mean, they're going for the volume game now, trying to get everyone they can onto these platforms and subscription-based revenue.
Yeah. And all these, you know, large tech companies, they're all just trying new and innovative ways to get into esports and gaming as well, because they obviously can see the huge potential in terms of revenues and engagement with the next generation of gamers. But it looks like, you know, they have enough capital to just try new things, see what sticks on the wall, and then, you know, see how it goes. You know, for example, would be Microsoft. I believe they launched a streaming platform to gain against Twitch, you know, paying, I think it was like, what, $20 million to a streamer so that they would move from Twitch to Microsoft. And then that didn't work out. They weren't able to grow as organically as they were trying to. So they shut it off, and the streamers, you know, they're back on Twitch, I think, or YouTube Gaming.
Well, that's the next generation of I guess, consumers now. That's a whole segment that they're trying to get a hold of, like you said. I mean, Amazon, more than anyone, I mean, you look at especially their consumer products. They'll make anything. They will make anything. I mean, they've got speakers to Kindle, to the routers, to the TV streaming, now the game streaming. I mean, it's bizarre what they do. I mean, the last thing, just on the theme of Amazon wanting to do everything under the sun, the last thing they announced was what they're calling the Ring Always Home Cam. I don't know if that's right. I might have got the name wrong, but this is a really cool one. I mean, it's riddled with privacy issues or concerns. I mean, essentially, it's a home sentry drone that flies around your house. So it's basically this box, and then this drone basically lifts itself out, does a circuit around your house, and it can only be one floor, but it does a circuit, records the video, then jumps back into the box, and then sends it to your phone. So it's like a home security system. And I think the intent is to replace, I guess, all those multi-camera systems that are already in place around homes, and have that rather than, you know, a lot of cameras, you have one camera that just moves around the house. I mean, I honestly think it's really cool, but I mean, Amazon's track record in privacy with their Amazon Echoes and stuff does raise a lot of alarm bells. But this is really cool. I mean, I might get one just for the fun of it.
Yeah, well, cool is one way to put it. This also sounds like the start of a Black Mirror episode, but that's just me with my tinfoil hat on.
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, if you think about it, people have home security cameras now, right? And you can access them from your phone. I mean, this isn't a new concept. Any security or privacy concerns you have on justified concerns that you have on this little drone thing, you should actually have the same concerns on the fixed cameras. But because it's coming from Amazon, it's amplified like 10 times.
No, that's right. Yeah, especially with their reputation and history.
Yeah, and they clearly saw this coming because the way they designed it is that the camera is actually covered when it's in the box and it doesn't record audio. So theoretically, and we've got to get our hands on one of these to actually figure it out, but theoretically, it's not recording anything at all when it's sitting down. It's only when it jumps out and does a little circuit around the house.
Yeah, but how, like, what's the purpose of it?
It's just for home surveillance, home security.
Yeah. I'm thinking behind that question was more, you know, you need continuous surveillance because you want to be able to tell if there's a break-in or anything different.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, same purpose, yeah, but you're doing this in, you know, periodic spot checks as opposed to being able to continuously monitor if someone's broken in and, you know, how did they break in? What did they do? This was really just being able to see the aftermath. So...
Well, if you, it's really funny when you have time, jump on the Amazon website or go on YouTube and find the ad video that they have for the product, because the example they gave was the drone jumps out of the box and then goes to the balcony for some reason and someone happens to be breaking in at that time. Yeah. And it's the most comical, like, product demo you've ever seen, because the guy's face is so fake. He's like, oh my God, there's this thing flying. What is it? And then basically jumps out the balcony. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's one of the funniest things, but I don't think that's prompted though. I think you're right. Like, I don't know if there's any triggers you can do to get the thing to start flying around, because it only has 5 minutes of flying time and it takes like 2 hours to charge.
Yeah. Okay. No, that does make sense. Like, sorry, if it was prompted, then it would make sense. So it'd be similar to tech that's used in industry now, right? So, you know, the mining companies, instead of sending someone out to the middle of nowhere to check, you know, if there is an intrusion or if it's just a kangaroo jumping over a fence, they send drones out because it's quick, it saves money, and it saves time as well, right? So it would make sense if it sits in a broader part of an ecosystem that, you know, triggers, oh, we've heard, you know, sound triggers of someone rustling, you know, ruffling through the bushes or something, that sent a drone out. But if it's unprompted, it sounds pretty redundant.
All right, so that wraps up the Amazon event. Let's just take a quick break because I think we're about 10, 20 minutes in. Let's just take a couple minutes and we'll be back shortly. All right, so the Google Pixel 5 event. I mean, there are three sort of key things that they launched at their event. I mean, I don't know if you watched it, and this goes back to the overall topic of these virtual press conferences or product announcements. It was the most weird thing ever. I mean, it felt like they were talking to you but not talking to you, and I don't know who that guy is that kicked off the presentation, but he did not feel like a human being. Like, it felt like Mark Zuckerberg at those hearings. He felt fake, like a robot. But anyway, I'm sure he's fine. Hope he doesn't meet me one day.
It's probably version, you know, AI version 4.0 or something.
It's Google Assistant on steroids.
Yeah, exactly. It's a real form.
Oh gosh, yeah. So what did they launch? I guess the really cool thing for me that they kicked off was Google TV. So this is their version of Apple TV, and it feels like they could be onto a winner here. And it's really around the same concept. So it's almost like a set-top box or something that you plug into your TV, and it almost serves as a portal for all of your streaming apps. You can download different apps, you get access to Netflix, Disney Plus, and everything under the sun, but depending on what jurisdiction you're in. And it's really cheap. In Australia, it's only $99. If you look at an Apple TV, that you're already looking at, I think, $400 or $500 for just a box before you even start talking about subscriptions. So I think they've really caught on to something here. I mean, I really like their Chromecast suite of products. And the good thing is that it works with iOS and iPhones. And the great thing about them is that they're cheap and easy to use. Like, you can actually, like, $50, I'm happy to buy one for every TV in the house versus I'm not going to buy a $400 Apple TV for every house. I mean, for every TV.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I'm actually surprised at companies still moving in this direction, though. I could be wrong. Like, I for me, my solution in terms of streaming is to use the smart TV functionality I have on my LG TV. Like, I've heard of, you know, nightmares, and I've dealt with Samsung TVs as well, and their smart TV functionality or OS isn't as intuitive, but I actually think that the LG one works quite well. And when there are apps that aren't available on the LG ecosystem, I use my phone to stream, and it actually streams in, it's not 4K, but it's, you know, it's viewable. So to me, that's quite seamless. I don't need an extra set-top box. Yeah, and it kind of makes sense, I think, to see that Apple's kind of moving away from the hardware component of the Apple TV, and instead they're working with Samsung and LG to embed the Apple TV functionality into their TVs.
Yeah, because you're right. I'm on the same page as you. I don't know what the play is here. I mean, unless they're, and Google very may well do this, but I don't know how they're going to try and monetize this, because unless they're trying to start to cram ads into the platform, I don't know how they're going to make money off this, because they're not a stream. They're not a content creator. Apple's a content creator. Amazon's a content creator, well, quasi-content creator through Amazon Prime TV or whatever it's called. But I don't know what Google's trying to do here. I mean, it's very similar to what Amazon's done. They've just launched products almost for the sake of it. And I don't know how they're making money, because they're at really low price points. It's bizarre.
Yeah. Well, just based on those two things that you said, Steve, around, you know, low price point, don't know what the rationale behind it is. It's probably around data collection. That's probably the play.
Yeah, yes. Oh, that's
probably listening as well. Who knows?
Thanks, Mr. Tinfoil. Like, yeah, you don't say that, because I've got a HomePod right next to me, and I don't need. Stop. All right, let's just quickly fly through the Google Pixel event. We've got the Nest Audio and the Nest Mini, which is their versions of smart speakers. This year, what they've done is that they've rebranded it under Nest. So Nest was another company that they acquired as well, that really did around home automation and stuff like that. I think they made thermostats, but I don't know why they used. Was it Nest?
Yeah, it was Nest. So they made thermostats. Was it directly thermostats? Like, it was
smart thermostats.
It was smart thermostats. It was like smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, and yeah, smoke alarms as well. So they're just the smart detectors around the home. That,
yeah, so it looks like Google's taken that brand and I guess use that for all of their home consumer products now, which makes sense. It, you know, consolidating under that brand, and they're really pitching it this year as I guess improvements in audio more than anything. I think they're all still powered by Google Assistant, and they're relatively cheap, $149 for their flagship smart speaker, which isn't that bad. You compare that to the HomePod, which comes out at $500, or actually when you compare it to Amazon stuff, I think that's about on par, isn't
comparable. Yeah, that's right. It's really, I think, yeah, the real standout in terms of pricing would be Apple HomePod. But the difference between the HomePod product and the Google and Amazon stuff is the sound quality. So they've obviously invested a lot more in getting the sound right. You know, in terms of reviews that I've read, I've never, you know, spent a lot of time listening to Google speakers. But the HomePod's amazing. Just from,
but at the same time, most people don't care. Like, if you can hear your music, it's fine. I say that, I haven't got a HomePod, but anyway. Let's quickly touch on the Pixel phone announcements. I mean, we won't get into it this week too much because we're not super across it yet, and we probably want to touch on this when the new iPhone drop, and we'll do a big phone segment. But basically, the 4A 5G, it's the same phone as the 4A that they released in the past. It's got 5G connectivity now. There's been a lot of buzz about 5G over the last year. Nothing's really happened yet in Australia, so I think it's a bit of fluff. And then on the Pixel 5, which is their new flagship Pixel, it's interesting that they don't have the Pixel XL anymore. So they've just dropped the extra large one.
Yeah. And even with the Pixel 5, I think there's been a bit of a surprise as to what they've released. So in terms of the specs of the phone and the price point, you know, it's priced at, I think, just at $1,000. So
Australian.
Yeah, Australian. So it's not super expensive by any means, you know, especially when you compare it with the line of flagship iPhones. But at the same time, the internals aren't flagship materials either. So you know, people in forums think that what they've released in the Pixel 5 should have been the Pixel 4a. So that's been a bit of a surprise. And at that price point, Samsung's got the Fans Edition, which also offers, I think, 5G, but much better internals. And they're also giving away the free wireless earbuds. So there's a bit more value there. But if you're an Android user, you'll value what Google Pixels have to offer, which is your software updates, which not every other brand can promise, you know, a couple of years down the line after you get your phone.
Oh, I don't know. I was just about to touch on that. Google's track record, I don't think they support the Pixel 3 anymore for Google, what do you call them? Android updates.
Yeah. So if you think that Google's not supporting their Pixels, you know, too far down the road, you'd be in for a surprise with the other brands as well. So, you know, MetaMind has an HTC and he hasn't received...
God, do they even exist anymore?
They still do. And their phones are all right from an Android perspective, but he hasn't received an update since, I think, late last year. And that's concerning from a security point of view. And, you know, if you like a clean kind of OS operating system that, you know, doesn't have all the bloatware that your Samsungs and your LGs have, then you would go for the Pixel because, yeah, it's really just the really clean version of the operating system.
I mean, but the fact is, and I'm going to speak out of line here, the Pixels aren't a priority for Google at all. I mean, they've got a whole bunch of hardware products that aren't a priority, but the Pixel phone lineup seems to be really at the bottom of the barrel, like below their speakers, below their Chromecast and their TV offering. They do not care about the Pixels. I mean, you've heard me go on about this before. They shipped a phone without an OS.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. And I think if they wanted to be an operating system developer, they need a hardware to test something on that they have end-to-end control on. I think that might be why. Otherwise, you know, they're not really competitive with the other Android producers.
I don't know. I think I was surprised. My personal prediction is that they're going to pull out of it within the next year or so. I think from what I've read something somewhere that I don't think they're making any money on it. I think they're just break even if they're lucky. Their hardware sales are really slow and they've died off in the last couple of generations, I think, just given, I guess, the varied experience. Like, people wanted to give it a shot when it first came out and the concept made sense. You know, why would you buy a phone that's, you know, got Google software on it if it's not made by Google? Like, you know, this is marrying both software and hardware, basically what Apple's done. This should be the best of the best.
Yeah.
And people bought into that concept, but I think Google failed to deliver.
Yeah.
And I know that we're just going to get flamed right now for having a go at Google, but the fact is that it doesn't seem like they're... doesn't seem like a priority for them, and I think they're going to pull out. If they're not making any money on it, why? Android isn't even a focus for them anymore.
Yeah.
Android used to be, and they're starting to pull away from that as well. But it's interesting.
Yeah, no, it'd definitely be interesting to hear other thoughts on this as well. I remember a couple of years ago when I was looking into potentially jumping into the Android ecosystem, what really appealed to me was the Pixel. It was not necessarily the latest and greatest tech specs wise, and it was also not necessarily the cheapest either, but it offered you know, the promise of updates from Google, and it was a clean kind of customizable operating system, and that I thought was enough to push me over the line, because I personally hate bloatware, and what I mean by bloatware is, you know, if you have a Samsung phone, you'll know that it comes with a whole suite of Samsung
Mail, yeah, Samsung exactly. Phone, Samsung these, Contacts.
Even what's their assistant called?
Bixby?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's a whole heap of things that you don't really need, and you don't want it there to slow your phone down either. This just reminds me of the PTSD that I get from Windows laptops, where, you know, certain manufacturers, you buy the laptop and there's like half the hard drive is just filled with bloatware. So
yeah, Lenovo updates. What's the difference between Lenovo updates and Windows updates? Don't get me started.
But exactly right.
If you bought a Pixel when you were thinking about buying a Pixel, you would have bought like at least two or three phones after that.
No, that's right.
To get to where you are now. Like,
exactly right.
Yeah, it's not good. Anyway, all right, let's take a quick break and then we'll head into our main segment around the home office headphones. Give us a second, we'll be back. All right, let's get stuck into the last segment around home office headphones. I mean, I guess the reason why this came up is, you know, we're all in a working from home environment right now. If you're working, I guess, in a professional services job, and it looks like this isn't going to change for at least the next 6 months, especially here in Victoria. I mean, we're not even out of lockdown yet. We're still trying to get on top of this second wave. And so I guess as more of us are working in common spaces at home, whether that be the living room, the kitchen dining table or whatnot, noise from constant Zoom and WebEx meetings means that more and more of us are thinking about, I guess, a pair of really good noise-canceling headphones to block out your sister, your mom, your brother, or whoever you're working with, just because it starts to become a real distraction as you start to get into sort of long-term working from home. And so I had a friend ask me recently the other day about this, and I didn't have an answer on this because I work alone at home. I've got my own dedicated space and people know to get away from me or else I will bite their head off. But, you know, Kai, I know this is an area that you're particularly, I guess, interested and passionate about. You've been across the headphone landscape for a long time, so I thought might be a good thing for us to have a chat about.
Yeah. No, I'd love to talk through this. You know, how long do we have, Steve?
Yeah, well, so let me just give you the rundown in terms of my mate's situation. I guess there's three of them working in the living room right now.
Yep.
And noise is starting to really become an issue. And I think when I mean noise, it's other people's voices.
Mm-hmm.
It's also worth noting that one of them work in a call center. So there's a couple of things I do want to tackle within this and unpack a bit. But anyway, so the question I was posed was, what's a good pair of headphones that can help me focus and block everything else out while I'm working? Also, I don't want to break the bank.
Yep.
So good luck with that brief.
that's really interesting. And that's something I think we all try to tackle even pre-COVID when we're in the office, you know, especially as we're all moving towards that open office working environment. It's often hard to be able to concentrate because it's just so much going on around you. So, you know, I've tested all sorts of headphones, earphones. I've been very keen and very interested to talk about this topic. I guess before we actually go into this, specifically addressing that situation, there's a couple of things we should talk about in the headphone or, you know, earphones world. And bear with me, this is not technical. Like, we're not going into, you know, frequency and hertz and you know, FLAC or audio. But there are a couple of different types of headphones that we should talk about. So from a headphones perspective, there's over-ear headphones, and that's probably the common ones that you see people wearing on the street and also on airplanes. And they're the ones where you have cushioning that kind of surrounds your ears.
I mean, how I would describe it, I guess everyone knows what Beats look like. And when you think of Beats, you're thinking of those big doof-doof headphones. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, no, that's right. So they're the Beats. You know, if you've been on an airplane, you'll see at least one, if not everyone on the plane with their Bose Quiet Comfort 30s or 35s. So those are your over-ear headphones, right? And then in a similar vein, there's also on-ear headphones. So they're...
Right, now you've lost me.
So on-ear headphones, they still have a band that sits on the top of your head, like a hairband. But instead of having a cushion that covers your ears, it's a cushion that sits on your ears. So it's kind of like, you know, think when you're up in the snow and you're wearing earmuffs. Kinda around that. So it kind of just sits on your ears. It doesn't surround the whole ear. So, you know, I guess the key difference there is that your ears don't overheat when you're wearing it for, you know, long periods of time. Your ears to get the ventilation, right?
Yeah. So your over ears sit, I guess, trying to bring it back to terms that I'm wrapping my head with, sit like around your ears, right? They go over your ears.
Yep.
Now I'm using the same terminology. And the on-ear headphones literally sit on top of your little flappy ear things.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, cool.
Yep. That's right. So it uses kind of the pressure to hold the headphones together, whereas over your ears would, you know, cover your whole ear. Yeah, so those are the two types. There might be more, but these are the two, you know, general types of headphones that you need to think about when you're looking for new headphones. And then something a bit more invasive would be your earphones, right? So these are things, these are like your AirPods, right? They actually go inside your ears. And there's two main kinds. There's your general earphones, which, you know, just sits on the outside of your ear. So it's like your AirPods and also the hands-free that you get. That comes with your iPhone or effectively any phone you get these days. The last one that I wanted to cover is your in-ear monitors. So these are earphones as well, but they're a lot more invasive in the sense that they actually go into your ear a bit more. So they're like your AirPods Pro, for example. right? So they actually have like a rubber tip that goes further into your ears, right?
Yeah, yeah, those ones that they kind of do like a little suction in your ear.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's right. And so you know, we definitely need to get that clear in terms of going into this conversation, because they all have different levels of comfort. They all have different levels of sound quality, and they all have different levels of noise cancelling. Right, and those are the three things I think are quite important, especially when you're trying to block out noise, when you're trying to work or when you're trying to concentrate, right? So let's go through that again. It's comfort, it's noise cancelling, and it's also sound quality, right? Probably won't touch too much on sound quality because that's very much personal preference. You know, if you Google enough on the headphones that you're interested in, you'll find, you know, frequency ranges and different types of things that's, you know, way beyond my knowledge. For me, sound quality is a preference. So I tend to like to try different things until I get the quality that I like. And it also depends on what you're listening to as well, right? Like if you like classical music, then, you know, Beats is not your types of headphones that you want because they're bass heavy, right? So if you're into techno, you're into trance, that's somewhere you should lean towards. So given those three things, that's effectively the three things that we'll be covering as we go through different type of headphones. And you know, I'll be very keen to share my experiences across those four types of headphones around over ear, on ears, and in ears. So you know, given going back to your mate's context, Steve, where there's a lot of people, there's a lot of voices or noise that you want to cancel out. Yeah, so from a noise cancelling perspective, the most effective noise cancelling would be your in-ear monitors.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not saying any in-ear monitors will cancel all the noise out, right? You're going to have to be quite... it depends on how niche you want to go, because you can actually get custom molds of the ear tips that you want, so it fits exactly to your ear's specifications, so that when you pop your earphones in, you block out all the noise, right? I have a pair of in-ear monitors that are from a company that specializes, I think... or in audio equipment, but I think, yeah, the basis of design is more like earplugs, right? So they actually look like earplugs. And I remember putting them in and falling asleep on a plane ride, and I woke up not knowing where I was because the noise cancelling was so good that I just didn't hear the hum of the plane. So that's effectively, so in-ear monitors effectively, you know, if you really want to go down to the point that it really, you know, covers out all the noise and distractions around you, get really good in-ear monitors, and that will serve its purpose, right? So it's effectively earplugs with a bit of noise or music that's going to play from whatever you're plugging into. The other option that you could explore would be your over-ear headphones. So this is your, you know, your Bose Quiet Comforts. They're really good at blocking out noise.
I've got a pair of those. They're great.
Yeah, no, that's right. So I think most of our offers have Quiet Comforts.
They are not swoop proof, though, I'll tell you that.
No, they're definitely not. This is probably where it's worth clarifying the differences in how these two headphones options that we've just covered cancel noise. So your in-ear monitors, they're effectively blocking out all the noise through insulation.
It's physically blocking the noise, isn't it?
Physically, yeah. So the terminology is passive noise cancelling, right? Because it doesn't need any additional tech. It's actually just blocking your ears so nothing else can get in, right? So that's your in-ear monitors. And then for your over-ear headphones, they're a combination of passive noise cancelling. So the cushion that sits between your ears and the headphones itself, that blocks out noise to an effect. It's not perfect. It's not going to block out all your noise, but that's going to block out some noise. And then on top of that, you have your active noise cancelling, which is effectively a microphone that listens to what's on the outside, what's happening on the outside, and then it produces frequency that's the exact opposite of it. So it blocks out that noise as well, right? So I'll give you an example. If you're sitting on a plane with your QC35s, right, you're going to hear the plane humming. That's your most constant, but also your most annoying noise when you're when you're on a plane, right? So those over-ear headphones will do a really good job in blocking that noise out because it's constant. So it's easy for the headphones to predict what's going on. But if there's a kid crying next to you, that headphones aren't going to be able to block out all of that noise because the kid's not crying out in a constant tone. It's going up, it's going down, it's stopping for a bit. So it's always going to be the Heifetz playing catch up, right?
I mean, no, that makes sense because I'm just reflecting on my QC35s and the other headphones I've got. You're right in that it's really good at blocking out just sort of ongoing noise, like whether it's leaf, like not really leaf blowing actually, but like wind noise, engine noise, all those sorts of things that kind of just drone on in the background. They just disappear away. But when someone talks to me, I'll usually be able to hear it. I'll be able to pick up at least some sort of a hum or a murmur and realize that they're talking to me. So I guess what does that mean? I mean, given that, I mean, trying to bring that back to the challenge here, I mean, given that most of the noise that she's trying to block out is people talking, or as you're describing it, sporadic and unpredictable noise, are overhear headphones the right way to go? I mean, for example, would QC35s be a good recommendation, or like as an all-rounder, or what do you think?
So it depends on, you know, if that's the only use that's going to be used for. So is it just to block out noise, or do you think you'll be using it for travel going down the road, right? So there's a bit of thought process that goes into it. I guess it's probably a bit more useful if you compare both and show the pros and cons of the two along the, you know, three things that we spoke about earlier around comfort, noise cancelling, and sound quality, right? So your in-ear monitors, comfort level probably not as good as your over-ear headphones because it's something stuck in your ear, right? And if you want to get really good noise cancelling, it's going to be pretty snug in your ear, right? So over time, it's probably not the most comfortable thing to have in your ear from long hours.
Yeah,
I personally don't mind it. So I actually like traveling with my in-ear monitors because it blocks out the noise. I don't need to worry about charging my headphones. And, you know, it's easy to lie on the side of my head when I'm sleeping without having, you know, a big headphone in the way.
Yeah. Well, I guess the real test is, I mean, given that this is really around the work environment, can you work 8 hours? I mean, you do have lunch in the middle. We don't, but most people have lunch in the middle. Can you work 8 hours straight with those headphones on? And that's not a question you can really answer, but I guess just trying to bring you down to the crux of it.
I think you can, because, you know, you're trying to drown out voices around you, but you don't actually need a perfect, you know, passive noise cancelling earphones to achieve that. You know, if you get maybe 60 to 80% of coverage from the earphones itself, the rest of the music will drown out everything else around you.
Yeah,
right. So that's probably good enough. It's not overly uncomfortable either. Like, it's not going to bug you after a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, that's a really good option. And you have a lot more variety as well, because you know, if budget is a key concern, you can actually pick up any of your earphones that you have now, and you can actually buy aftermarket ear tips that does a really good job of cancelling out noise, right? Yep. So you can get little foams. The brand is called Comply Foam. So we're not affiliated. We're not sponsored by them, but it's a brand that I've tried recently, and it's actually really good.
Yeah, we'll drop a link in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So it's earphone tips that you kind of squish. It's like a marshmallow, right? So you put it in your earphones, you squish it, and then you put it in your ear, and it kind of expands out. So it kind of fills the rest of your ear canal. Yeah, so you do have to change it, you know, every couple of months, every 6 months maybe, depending on how often you use it, because you know, it's going to pick up earwax. It's going to pick up earwax, right?
That's gross. Oh, that's gross. Yeah. No.
But it does a really good job in drowning out sound. So yeah, if the key thing is to block out voices, I would get the in-ear monitors that, you know, sit well in your ears.
So what I mean, I guess, I mean, you flagged the aftermarket tips to think about. I mean, sounds like she doesn't have an existing set of headphones. What would you point her towards?
Yeah, okay. So if you were keen to get in-ear monitors and go down that route, you have a lot more flexibility, given that, you know, there's a lot of earphones out there. And as long as it has removable tips, then you can, you know, jump on Comply Foam, I think that's what they're called. And buy the aftermarket foam that fits your ear tips and fits your for earphones for you to, yeah, just plug and play. I personally use the Etymotics. So again, they're quite a niche company. You can only find them in a couple of audio resellers in Australia. But they
online?
Really focus. Not in stores as well.
Okay.
But it's not, you know, your common brand that you'll find at JB.
Right.
but they produce really, you know, I really like their sound quality based on what I'm listening to. They're not bass heavy, but it fits, you know, what I listen to. So that's probably your most flexible option, because you're really just mixing and matching the ear tips with whatever earphones that you may have, or, you know, you can actually just buy something that suits your sound profile or your budget, right? From the, you know, if we're looking at over-ears headphones, so that's, you know, your...
The big ones. Big ones that sit right on your head.
Yeah, the big ones that sit right on your head. You know, you won't go wrong with the Bose Quiet Comfort 30s. Is it 30s or 35s?
I've got the 35s, I think.
Yeah, so yeah, sorry. So it's the Bose Quiet Comfort 35s. You're not going to go wrong with them. And they're relatively cheaper now because Bose has a new range. It's the Quiet Comfort. Sorry, it's not the Quiet Comfort. It's just called the Bose 700s.
Yeah.
So they are at the updates. But, you know, if you're budget conscious, you're not going to go wrong with the Quiet Comfort 35s.
Yeah, we've both got the 35s. I think we both use them in an office context as well. I wouldn't say that they're, like, outstanding at blocking out voices, especially if they're close to you. But in terms of just other noise, like in terms of like humming and things like that, and once you've got music playing, you can't really hear anyone else anyway. I think they're really good in terms of an office context, because it does start, you can still hear the noise, but it pushes them almost very much into the background. So you still have an awareness if people are talking around you, especially if they're trying to get your attention, but you know, it's enough for you to just sort of step away and let you focus on your work.
One thing to note is because it's over ears, it's cushions around your ear. When it gets to summer, it could get a bit hot. So that's just one thing to think about. Whereas your in-ear monitors, that's not going to be an issue because you don't have earmuffs, you know, on your head for long hours.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, just to give everyone a bit of a choice, what other over-ear headphones are there on the market, just to give a think about them, why you don't have them?
Yeah, so the main competitor to the Bose Quiet Comfort 35s would be the Sony. This is you know, market, their marketing division on steroids here, but it's called the Sony WH-1000XM3 wireless noise cancelling over ear headphones.
Did you just break and just start speaking tongues?
So it's not the catchiest name, but they're known to be probably the first proper contender to the Quiet Comfort line of Bose. So Bose have been, you know, leaders in this space for the last, you know, 2,000 years. And Sony's come in and actually put in a contender that is just as good.
Yeah, I think they win out on sound quality. I think that's the thing that wins them over, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. So the sound quality is a lot better than the Quiet Comforts. But if noise cancelling is your main priority, it apparently is slightly inferior to the Quiet Comforts. So that's your trade-off.
And when we say sound quality is better on the Sonys, like the Quiet Comforts, I'm using them all the time. It's not like you're going to be listening to static. It's fine. Like, it's perfectly fine. It's much better than probably most headphones or earphones that you've used to date. I mean, most people sport around AirPods now. And their orders are managed better than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think sound quality is an issue for most people. I think a lot of people won't notice either between the Sonys and the Bose.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's right. And I think a plus on over-ear headphones is that you can actually go in-store and try it out, and it's not as gross as trying out in-ear monitors.
Cool. So it sounds like, just to sum that up, we've got over-ear headphones, and it sounds like the Bose and the Sonys are the ones that you're pointing towards, with a bit more of a lean towards the Bose QC35s. You also mentioned the in-ear monitors, which is actually really interesting because I haven't heard that perspective before, so I'll have a look into it. What was the brand again? We really got to get the link in the notes.
Yeah. The brand for the ear tips would be Comply Foam. So they're just dedicated. Well, they have a product line on just foam tips that suits different earphones. And the earphones that I use are the Atomotic Research. I think that's their company, Atomotic Research, and they're really big into, you know, audio research.
Cool. All right. Well, hopefully that answers the question. I mean, if we get any questions, feel free to ping us, but we might wrap up there today. Thanks for joining in. I mean, this was a bit of a monster of an episode. I think we're, at least before we, you know, do any bit of editing on this, we're sitting at just over an hour. But yeah, thanks for listening in, everyone, this week. Join in next week. If you have the time, please give us a review. We'd love to hear what you guys think of the last couple episodes in terms of how we're tackling, this podcast. And yeah, if you like it, give us a subscribe. Thanks, guys.